If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Hello, and welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. Today, I am doing a show on AI and ethics, specifically regards to art and society and long-term planning. My name is Aaron Wang, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kira Tianen and Michael Robert Kaditz. Every year, there's a studio tour close to where I live in Nanaimo on Gabriola Island, and I find it a privilege and an honor to go and talk to the artists in their studios and buy some of small things here and there, because I don't currently have a ton of money or wall space for buying large paintings. But while I was talking to them, I had a few really good conversations about artificial intelligence, specifically like AI generation and art. And for most of the artists, they're putting up signs saying no AI generation used in the creation of this art. Or there was someone else who is an artist that talks about social issues through her art, or tries to get people to think critically about society through her art. She was talking about how we had a good conversation about, do we need long-term planning with regards to artificial intelligence? And do we need that from the government perspective? And the example that she was talking about was, if you look at how Norway has used long-term planning in their oil and gas sector, they've been able to create a sovereign wealth fund. They've had responsible stewardship of natural resources, which is the exception rather than the rule. There are many countries that have been destroyed by overzealous mining of resources and corporate greed, trying to have long-term planning and finding a place for government involvement was something she thought was very important. Taking that and bringing it into the artificial intelligence question, do we need to have long-term planning or government regulation in the artificial intelligence space? Is that something that would be to the benefit of society, or is it detrimental to have regulation or over-regulation of artificial intelligence? Does that hurt innovation? Does that hurt our technological advancement? Does that hurt humanity?
My preliminary reaction before you get into the details, Aaron, is skepticism about whether emerging technology, inevitable technology, whether the natural progression of science and technology can be or should be thwarted in some way or precluded in some way by governmental policy. Now, I know there's a difference between regulation and an outright attempt to forbid a certain type of science or technology from producing products and so on. But I approach this topic initially with some skepticism that regulation or policy can in some way prevent what I would see as inevitable progression of science from running its course.
Do you want to give an example for our listeners? Is there something that you've heard of in the past where overzealous regulation has just not been effective and it was kind of just a waste of time and resources to create? Do you have any examples on hand that you can think of? Or is that just the general sentiment that you have from your education background at this point?
One area that is of concern to me that led me to think about this is experiments with genetics. There was a lot of controversy around genetics. There was controversy around genetically modified foods. There's controversy around improving human beings with technology, or planting chips in people's brains or in their bodies or whatever. And I can understand that there might need to be regulation like there is with anything else in society, but I don't see how you can prevent technology from moving forward. Even if you were able to do it in one country or in one legislative schema in a particular state, province, country, region, I don't see how you could prevent it from technology from progressing the world over. There's going to be some country, whether it's China, whether it's Russia, whether it's Japan or Taiwan, there's going to be some place where the regulatory scheme is different than it is, say, in Canada or the United States. And once the technology is ripe, I think that someone's going to develop it. And so I can understand regulation, but I don't think it's a fair question to say, should we allow AI, you know, or should we allow genetic manipulation, or should we allow to improve human beings with technology? Because it's going to happen. So we have to be realistic and find ways to maybe impose requirements for democracy, justice, transparency, things that are fair and reasonable, but you can't stop the technology from developing.
So for myself, what kind of comes as a bit of an issue is comparing what a government does about their energy policies with art in the free market. When it comes to whether or not a government should forbid artificial intelligence because of the social issue that might happen within the country. Because we know that we are so interconnected globally that even if a government like Canada said, we're not going to sell any art that is not that is made by artificial intelligence, I think then we would be not even competing with the rest of the globe on what could be considered art, and therefore would actually hinder our innovation. And that's kind of one of the things that you brought up, whether it would benefit us or not. And I honestly always get a little timid when we rely on government to do anything, because right now with the way that the world is set up, I would say that the private sector is the one that is innovating and the government is playing catch up. Art isn't a large enough piece of the pie for the government to really give the right kind of attention to it like they would energy.
Well, I do think it's worth pointing out that Canada's energy policies, and I'm very proud of this country. I love Canada. I've lived here my whole life. That said, I don't think we've always had very good energy policy. I do think that what Norway has been able to do in terms of long-term planning and in terms of creating a conversation about how can we do what's best for Norway with their energy sector is just a better conversation than what we've done in Canada. In Canada, I think we have a lot of regionalism. There's this idea that the energy sector should only benefit the sector where the oil is. And then there's the other argument of like, well, you know, all of that money needs to go to where the majority of people live in Canada. And then there's the other argument of, you know, we should be using that money to diversify our economy, and we shouldn't be over investing in one sector of our economy. So I think but the main reason I brought that up is because that's an example of a conversation that has happened in terms of the long-term planning in government that has a huge effect on the country. Energy policy has a huge effect into the future of any country, because we need energy to do all sorts of things. In a similar way, artificial intelligence technology is going to have a huge effect on our country, whether we choose to be the front runners of it or whether we get excluded from the race entirely due to overprotective legislation that prevents us from using technologies that are readily available in America. There are American companies, even currently, I know Google, for instance, Canada was one of the last places they released their new LLM, artificial intelligence models, because they were so unsure about whether or not it was legal in Canada, because our laws are not aren't clear. Recently in Canada, this was I think a few years ago now, there was an example where the federal government in Canada, in an attempt to legislate the private sector, they said they would sue Meta, formerly Facebook, or they put in a law, sorry, Sue is incorrect. They put in a law saying that if Facebook did not meet the requirements the Canadian government was setting for Canadian news when it was distributed in Canada, then they would charge Facebook a percentage of their global revenue, to which Facebook responded by taking all Canadian news off of their platform, period. Artificial intelligence affects our lives in a lot of different ways. That's probably only going to increase in the future. And if we want to live in a better society, having conversations about that and planning that and just thinking things through more, that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to result in government action, but communicating with government and the public communicating with government, the government communicating with the public, the private sector communicating with the public sector communicating with the private sector communicating with government, government communicating to the private sector. Everyone just needs to communicate with everyone if we're going to have these technologies affect us in positive ways rather than negative ways. Because there's a lot of ways this could go wrong, and I think there's a lot fewer ways this could potentially go right for us.
Earlier when I was advocating for reasonable regulation, but not in an attempt to curtail or inhibit or prevent development of artificial intelligence, I did not mean to imply that the private sector necessarily should be the arena or the sphere where the AI is developed. And this is where I'm going to distinguish myself from what Kira said. And with all respect, I don't agree that the private sector is the place of preference for development of technology, because as Kira suggested, the private sector is somehow more innovative or better equipped. I don't agree with some of the concepts of capitalism and especially the more unfettered type of capitalism. We have to remember, since we're philosophers, the foundation for government. So if we get out of the AI sphere for a moment and go back to some of our basic philosophy or our basic foundation of the contract, social contract. The reason we have government is so people can live in a civilized way, in a rational way, in a reasonable way with each other. That's what government is. Government is the agreements that people make. It's the manifestation, the form, the result of agreements that people make. So rather than living in a Hobbesian state of nature, the war of all against all, people can live in a rational, civilized society and get along with each other. And that's why we have government. One of the reasons why we have government, and that's why we have laws, and that's why we have rules. And I really take exception to what's been, you know, a trend recently to belittle government, to distrust government, to favor the private sector. I don't think that's fair, and I think it's dangerous because I think the private sector has done a lot of damage and caused a lot of harm in its quote-unquote innovation. There's been a lot of environmental damage, a lot of injustice done to people, to minorities, to women have been traditionally discriminated against in the private sector. In much of the world, there's still a lot of injustice and discrimination and being done in the private sector. And I think the government, the public sector, is more equipped to rectify those problems and to regulate, actually. So I come down in favor of the continued development of technology, but more in the public sphere and in universities by researchers. I favor tax money being used by governments to promote the development of science and technology by offering grants to researchers and universities. So that's where I come down. So my position is a little bit different than Kira's.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fair that you have that position, and it's nice that you clarify that, because for myself, I think that I just accept that I live in a capitalist world, and I try to work within that framework. And the reason why I get, I guess, timid is, like you said, that so government is based on the social contract. Well, the social contract never included women. It was a rule for men. And so in that, like, you know, you could talk about the rule of law. And then so there's John Locke, right? And like kind of their philosophies, you could get into a debate about that. My way to analyze this type of situation when it comes to artificial intelligence is not to debate what philosophy of government we should abide by, but what's going on today in today's world. And so today, I still believe that the private sector has the larger piece of the pie, despite maybe us wanting education and secondary school to lead that conversation. Right now, that's not happening. Right now, we have Elon Musk, you know, and we have Trump going on. We have all of this capitalist superpowers coming in and calling the shots on what's happening with the world. And as much as we don't like it, we have to think about, well, how is that going to impact our country? And how do we react with it in a way that is ethically just, but then also not hindering us to a point where we become irrelevant?
I'm just thinking about drones. So I'm not sure that drones are the best example of AI, but they are an example of emerging, recently enabled technology, right? So drones are highly controversial, but the technology became available, not just the technology for the mechanics of the drone itself, but for the camera, right? For the tiny high resolution video cameras that are normally in consumer hobbyist drones, and even in professionally used drones, especially perhaps that's one of the main reasons for flying a drone. I mean, unless it's a military drone where you're trying to, you know, which is being used as a weapon. If we're talking about drones being used professionally or by hobbyists, it's mainly to get videography of, you know, from above. Drones can be highly intrusive to people, and there's privacy issues. And so I guess what's happened is there has not been any successful attempt to prohibit drones or make drones outright illegal or stop the technology from developing. But what's happened is that various governments and jurisdictions, municipalities, provinces, are working out legislation and policy to somehow balance the competing interests and place restrictions on drones in certain areas. With respect to how close they can fly to people and whether they can fly over parks. And so maybe it's not completely worked out yet, and maybe there's still controversy, but what is happening is the technology is being accepted and the government's doing its role that it should be doing of setting policy and regulation that balances the competing interests. So I think the same thing is inevitably going to happen with other forms of AI. And maybe we need to get back to art a little bit. I have some ideas about art specifically, but I think once technology is available, there's this progression and evolution of science and technology over the decades and over the centuries. There's no stopping it, and we have to be realistic and just find ways to use government for what government is intended for, which is to find ways of balancing competing interests and providing a just and reasonable way for people to live.
And I see that, but I also have a drone that's under 250 grams, which allows me to fly in parks and anywhere I want. So I think that technology just pivots around the policy and regulations instead of actually abiding by it.
All right, I'm gonna cut things off there and pull things back in the direction of art. But I'm going to respond a little bit to that interchange. By the way, thank you, both of you. I think that was brilliant. So how I want to respond to that is, when I took my technology and ethics course, just to respond to something that Michael said about how we can't stop things that are emerging and evolving, it's that we studied a lot about the history of technology. And what's very interesting, and Brandon and Hale have been doing some amazing shows on media theory, which is actually also very related to the history of technology, but it depends on how you define technology. Generally speaking, from the philosophical tradition, especially the modern philosophical tradition, they define technology quite broadly, basically to be any human invention. So you consider language a technology, although that would not be traditional, because we normally think of just like machines as technology and software as technology and artificial intelligence as technology. But ideas can also be a technology. And ideas are a technology that once it's been invented, once an idea has been created and spread through society, you can't take it back. You can never take an idea back once it's influenced society. You can generate new ideas, but you can never remove an idea or the effect of an idea from society once it's propagated. And that's true of a whole bunch of technologies. It's true of laws. It's also true of ideas. Okay, so moving on specifically to art, because I think now the audience is hopefully mentally prepared for the gymnastics we're about to do. So let's imagine, not naming any names, but let's imagine there's a bad company, let's say. Let's say it's from the private sector. And they create a vision statement saying that they want to democratize art. And they envision this meaning as everyone should be able to create their art as easily as humanly possible. Is there anything wrong with that? I'm just going to come up with an easy name. Let's call it Art Inc. So Art Inc. wants to make art accessible to everyone. That sounds like a great vision. That sounds like that'd be good for society. But then there's another question of, well, then how are they going to make art available to society? Well, they're going to create an artificial intelligence system that is very easy to use, that people can talk to or type words to, that will generate art based off of the text description or the speech to text. And it's like, okay, well, you know, that sounds great. I don't see any problem with this. As someone who's a regular person in society, this benefits me. I get to make more art. All of this seems fine. And then we open the black box of artificial intelligence. And what do we find inside? We find that this model, artificial intelligence model, was trained on hundreds of years of artistic imagery from hundreds of thousands and millions of artists. And none of them had any say in the creation of this technology. And some of them are losing their livelihoods, losing their businesses, losing their place in society in some ways because of this technology. So now that I've painted that picture, where do you two feel like you stand on this? Should we abolish Art Inc. and stop them? Should we just let them run rampant? Is Art Inc. morally good and ethically justified in giving art to the masses if that means taking away the hard-earned efforts of many other artists and their place in society?
How are the artists who used to earn their money on their art now, how are they now losing their income because of Art Inc.? Explain that to me.
Well, let's say Art Inc. is directly competing with artists. So they find an artist, they train their model on all their pictures, they try to make pictures that appeal to their audience, and then they directly compete with them through advertising. So let's make this a completely villainous picture where this is a company that is solely interested in profit through democratizing art. So let's say they're doing it that way, because there could be some more morally ambiguous cases, but let's just take the easy one first.
But if they're stealing imagery or concepts or art, whatever form it's in, from artists, isn't that a copyright infringement? Isn't there an issue with that? Couldn't they be prevented from infringing on the copyrights of artists?
Well, okay, but how would we enforce that?
Oh, so it's an enforcement issue that you're
concerned about. I mean, it's a very good question. I mean, these technologies to generate artwork from text haven't existed for that long, and in many countries the law hasn't caught up with them yet. So I know Germany came up with a law where they basically said that anything that is created as art through an artificial intelligence system is not copyrightable. So that's one way they address this. They basically said that only human-created art has the right to be copyrighted, and AI-created art does not have the right to be copyrighted. You might still be able to sell it, although I think in Germany they actually do ban the sale of some AI-generated art. So it's actually a very interesting question. In Canada, artists are still able to copyright their own work, but I mean, let's say Art Inc. copyrights all of the images it produces by artificial intelligence. It can create 100,000 artistic images similar to the ones of the artist created in a few seconds. And now that artist, who, let's say they had a very unique style, they created 100 pieces and AI was trained on that. It creates 100,000 in 2 hours. And now that artist can't make their work in the marketplace because this AI company has directly competed with them in the marketplace in a capitalist sense. And like, are you starting to see why this is not exactly fair?
So can you give a more specific example just so I can understand?
Okay.
Let's talk about what? Mm-hmm. A painting, a sculpture?
Let's say a painting, okay?
Let's say a painting.
Right.
There's an artist, old-fashioned style artist that used to actually use watercolors and make a certain style of painting.
Yep.
And maybe did 20 of them or 30 of them or 40 of them. But now there's AI that can generate the same style of paintings, quote-unquote paintings, reproductions, but can do thousands or hundreds of thousands of them and maybe variations of them, but they look pretty much the same style as those produced by an artist that used to hand paint them and can only do 20 or 30, say, in a year. So is that what you're talking about, that kind of thing? So it dilutes the marketplace with AI-generated artwork, which is similar or maybe sufficient for the masses of people to buy. They don't know the difference between that and what the artist hand drew. And so now it's cheaper probably, so now it makes the artwork of the artist who did it by hand diluted in the marketplace. Why would someone pay extra to have something done by an artist hand-drawn when they can get something for, you know, much cheaper that was done by AI and maybe order it to, you know, to their own particular liking? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
So the question is then, what is the question? Is the question, is this ethical? Should we have laws preventing it? Should we regulate it? So I guess that's what I'm asking you, Aaron, is like, what question are you posing? Is this an ethical question or a policy question? Is it a political question? What is the proposition?
Well, I guess my question is that, like, for me, this seems unethical. This this should not be allowed. Like, the government should be, like you were saying, they should be creating some kind of extension of copyright or some type of mechanism that allows artists to be paid some kind of royalty, or they must be paid some kind of royalty from something that uses their work, or they have to, an AI company that wants to generate these images needs to get permission from artists before it's allowed to generate art, or at least that these AI companies, if they're going to do this kind of shady thing, they need to get permission from the government and the government can handle the aftermath. Like, I feel like there has to be, if we want this to end up being just and ethical, then we need to think through this somehow. So that's the path I'm looking at this of like, this is kind of this current situation we're in where AI art is appearing as a alternative to human-based art. I have a great appreciation for human-based or human-created art. I think it's very important. It's very life-giving, both to the artists and to society and the communities. And so I think it's something that needs to be protected, like a natural resource or a natural environment.
The first thing that kind of comes up for me for that is, well, what about like Louis Vuitton knockoffs? You know, as a, you could kind of draw a parallel in that it's something that the world has kind of just had to accept, that we now have fast fashion. We have machines that build and produce clothes at mass amounts for a very low price. And then there's other people who appreciate the design and the designer and the handcraftedness of it, and they will pay that luxury fee to then own luxury items. And I think that is the equivalent of art in that way. So you can either buy your knockoff AI art, you have your digital version of that, and that is still something that is part of the free market, or you have a luxury art that has been made by a person that you understand that there has been more work, there's oil on it, it's a physical thing that you can have in your home. And I think that that doesn't hinder it, but actually just creates a broader market. And it's like the same thing of, you know, people at home, say like a lower class individual who would never have been able to obtain that art can now appreciate that art in their home. And I think that is still, would be argued as an ethical good, because then, yes, it might be bad for the person who created the art, but all around, it's a positive thing for society. And so I think that's why I get so uncomfortable about regulation, because who is the regulation serving? Is it serving the elitist?
And perhaps the wealthy artists. I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. We've had a great discussion so far on